Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on Facebook.com/TBI Network or at TBIFN.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. Mental trauma on our world with Ukraine. Those are the topics we're going to discuss tonight. I'm Terry Smith, your host of Surviving Head Trauma on the Brain Injury Radio Network. Welcome to another episode and another month. Welcome to our live show. If you're listening live or archived, we wish you morning, noon, or evening well-being. And we'll be right back after this announcement from Brain Injury Association of America.
If you've experienced a brain injury, you're not alone. For help, call the Brain Injury Association today at 1-800-444-6443, 1-800-444-6443, on the web at BIAUSA.org.
BIAUSA.org, Brain Injury Association. Wherever you are, there is probably a location near you. So if you visit their website, you can find a local chapter that can help you. Because when you're starting out in this world of brain trauma, you can use all of the aid you are able to get, as you probably well know and are learning. And if you've been in this a while and need to help, you may join Brain Injury Association as a volunteer. So give them a call. I'm Terry Smith, your host. We're waiting for our other hosts to join us tonight, Michelle and Angela. Angela is not going to come in until next month, so we will wait another month if she rejoins the cast here in the studio. So Michelle, however, will be in tonight. Hopefully she's scheduled to come in, and we will get to our topics. We also want to especially thank our network owner, Craig Cecilia. He keeps us on the air and keeps our voice of this silent epidemic heard and making prevention possible because of raising awareness. And we know what happens if you raise awareness and create prevention. We save lives. So thank you, Craig. And Kim Justice, who is the manager of this network. She runs everyone's show and the hosts who provide you a show each night of the week. And she herself is a host of Recovery Now every Wednesday on the same network. Moving Forward is another podcast radio live show from Kelly KJ Jones and Dr. Valentina. They're on third and fourth Sundays of each month. So give us a listen every night of the week and tune in to a different topic each time with different hosts for different shows. Meanwhile, if you'd like to reach us this evening, our country code is 1 if you're calling from outside of the United States. And if you're inside the country, it's area code 424-243-9540, because you are our topic each month. We have basic fundamentals that we're going to cover, which I give you at the show, but whatever you want to discuss is what we do. We roll with the flow of your energy. We keep in rhyme with the ocean tide. So you give us the energy and we'll guide a show that way and discuss it in an open forum. Hopefully we'll get other callers to join in. So let's get started with tonight's top of the headliner, the big one. Brain Injury Awareness Month. I mean, we've already covered that. But mental trauma on our world right now is what we've talked about in the book that we wrote, Surviving Head Trauma. That's something else you might want to know. We have a book. Not only this broadcast, Surviving Head Trauma, but the book is available anywhere books are sold. And you can find other books written by yours truly, Terry Smith, at terrysmithbooks.com. And on Facebook, there's a Surviving Head Trauma page. All right. With all those endorsements, we're going to get on with some topics about the trauma and what's happening. And meanwhile, I think our co-host has joined us. I see her on the switchboard. So let's get her on the line. And wait, I got to get that switchboard back up. And that's not her. It's not her. So we will wait just a little bit longer. I think, wait, maybe. Let's have a music break and come back to this once we get our guest, our co-host on the line, because I'm not sure which night we don't want to do anything wrong, because we have to rise to the occasion with Cyndi Lauper tonight. Rise to the occasion. Check her out on YouTube. Wait, our music is not playing. There she is, Cyndi Lauper. Rise to the occasion. Check her out on YouTube. We'll be right back. to the occasion, Cindy Cook, C-Y-N-D-I. Look her up on YouTube. Check her out. Check out her music. We have our co-host with us now, Michelle. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. I do apologize for being tardy today, but I'm here now. 100%. 100%.
Well, we're happy to have you. Because we say on our banner, we're all the way live. That means we're alert and awake, right? We're all the way live.
Yes. I was making myself a cup of coffee. I said, you know, I sounded so sleepy and tired and sluggish last week, and I kind of zoned out. So this week I will not do a
repeat. Are you hopped up on caffeine tonight is what you're saying?
No, I got a little bit of rest and prepared for the show and just different. I have not had a stressful day, so that helps. Last month, I'll say, you know, it's a busy month with all kinds of things happening. March Madness was coming up, Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, Ash Wednesday. There were so many things going on. It just was St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, my goodness, March. That's right. That's the big one.
Yeah, so February, we just finished Valentine's and all that. And so it was just busy.
Well, I'm glad to see take a deep breath and tonight just relax and talk about the trauma of the world
So much has happened since we last
were together. Oh, my goodness, Michelle, what's happening in our planet? Our spaceship, Mother Earth, our home, our spaceship, soaring through our vast sea of time and space. And we're living
it's a bad time.
What's going on, man? What's happening?
Unrest, uncertainty, and all of that is a perfect storm for PTSD. Anxiety, all kinds of things. So, yeah, we've got lots to talk about now.
I know, and it's Brain Injury Awareness Month, so it's
correct.
We're all in time now to see how far we've come and what we have yet to come. The world, it seems, is having a significant brain trauma. So, in fact, my book, Surviving Head Trauma, written a while ago, long before this happened, talks about the world having a brain trauma. It seems as if it doesn't stop. So like ours, it doesn't go away. So we find ways to cope with it. But
that's correct. And I want to make sure everyone knows that we are not experts by any means.
Not.
But
ding, ding, ding.
We have both experienced TBI. We have both.
Both.
So tonight's show is basically you and me sharing our experiences, opinions, and stories on this topic and whatever topic the callers bring to us. That's relevant, of course.
Yes. In fact, I talked and said that before you came on air that our audience is our show. We start with basic foundation. When tonight it's mental trauma in the world and Brain Injury Awareness Month, but we are flexible and we'll go with whatever you call and talk about. Oh, by the way, I gave you the phone number, audience, and it's, again, country code 1 if you're outside of the United States, area code 424-243-9540. But if you'd like to comment with us on air, press 1 on your phone and a little emoji will pop up on the switchboard and that will bring you on air. So, Michelle, I guess we can jump into it. I've done some research here and found some quite a few articles written in some prominent with prominent credentials here. So about the effects of what's happening, not only in Ukraine itself, but globally, but the mental health.
I mean, you know, we're all connected. I mean, people think. It's so easy to think, well, I'm going to stay in my little house. I mean, I think that. And a lot of people, we talked about last week, agoraphobia. I have a story about that. But a lot of people think, I'm okay, I'm going to be in my little neighborhood, I'm in my house or my city, and they stay in their little family and their circle of friends, and
their
they think, yes, small, their city, their state, their country, their continent, but somehow we're all interlinked. So
without doubt,
your what happens in your home has an effect on what you do outside of your home and in your city and your neighborhood, which just trickles out everywhere, you know? So I definitely believe that whether directly or indirectly, the conflict that's happening, you know, in Ukraine and all other conflicts, they come back to us, not just in fuel, expensive prices of different goods. It's a mental and emotional tie as a human race that we all feel on some level.
Well, you know, it's scientific now. It's been examined, and there's an article. In fact, I'll take credit for or read credit from the Republic World, and they're saying that people who have nothing to do with the war have been caught between the crossfiring of two warring countries, and they are bound to undergo tremendous psychological challenges due to the debilitating situation. The pressure of seeing weapons firing, bombardments, leave a huge impact on the person. Despite being trained in the army to act wisely in a warlike scenario, even army men go through immense psychological pressure, says the Republic. So we have more specific, but I don't want to turn this into a reading session where I read an article to you, but it continues to go on about the long-lasting effect, not just the immediate results of this trauma infliction, but for generations to come. I mean,
well, right, yeah, they right. You pass those prejudices, fears, upset, anger, anxiety, in that you've experienced to the next generation. I mean, I do believe that. I don't have any. That's just my opinion. I don't have anything really to base it on, but yeah, the things that are happening now in the world are going to affect not just this generation, the people who've seen it will have years. It'll be in the history and stories and memories. We've seen it before in other wars. We've seen it before in other conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
That there are generations of waves of turmoil that one incident may inflict on just people who weren't there.
Well, psychosomatic ailments also occur as an aftermath of war. In fact, Dr. Jalpa Bhutta, a consultant psychiatrist at Global Hospital Mumbai, explained the psychological impact war can have on people. He says that talking about Russia's relentless military offensive in Ukraine, Dr. Bhutta said, Ukrainians are suffering through life-threatening traumas. The war survivors in Ukraine would be dealing with a lot of uncertainties. They don't know whether they will be able to survive or will they be able to protect their families. Will they be separated? What does the future hold for them? And all these are the questions that will be troubling them. And a warlike crisis could give anybody severe anxiety. People can go into depression. The depression might later go into PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And
right.
He goes on, to explain how it can goes into depressive disorders, anxiety disorders, psychosomatic ailments like chronic body aches, arthritis, sleep disturbances. He says they might even resort to alcohol and substance abuse. And
he's definitely right. I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist, psychologist, or any kind of mental health expert, but there is a relationship between chronic pain and PTSD, and those anxiety, and that anxiety around that and hopelessness creates a perfect storm
addiction
for depression and other things. That
suicide.
Suicide, exactly.
Depression.
Yeah, I think your hopelessness and pain, chronic pain, is a very, very big part of the pie when you get to PTSD, depression, and suicide. And there's a maybe a graph or something, but that's one of the things that we need to be aware of. You know, in my field, I do see a lot of pain, people in pain, and chronic pain, and the depression and anxiety and hopelessness, and it's never going to get better. It's just a spiral, like a little hamster wheel. You're feeling bad, and you're in pain, you take the medicine, and then, you know, it just kind of can spiral out of control. So we need to talk about it, address it. And
let's talk about that. Let's talk about the opioid addiction, because that sounds something right up your alley. For our audience members who don't know Michelle yet, she's relatively new to the show, but she's a licensed pharmacist, but not just a pharmacist. Tell us who you are again, to our audience, briefly, your background.
Oh, goodness.
You're extraordinary.
I am a pharmacist. I've been a pharmacist for quite a while. I've worked for several companies all over. I worked in Europe for a while. I've worked in most of the states, and I have done quite a bit of interesting things. And the way I received my TBI is I was riding my bike to work, and a car hit me, and I was knocked unconscious. And for about a year or two, I did go through some rehab and brain training, and I did get most of my outside scars were healed, and most of the brain injury did subside. But I still have a bit of loss for some of my words. I can't.
Aphasia.
What's that word?
Aphasia.
Love. I love reading, and my just have a voracious appetite for words and the meaning and languages, and that was affected somewhat, and I still have that. I also lost some of my number sense, which is quite necessary in pharmacy. But right now I work from home. I can basically work from anywhere, and I just love my life. I'm high on life. I'm happy to be alive, but I do value my education, and I value my patients, and I value my job and all my friends, and I just feel very fortunate to still be here and able to do this show with you.
Yes. Well, thank you
for your time
with us, and your survivor. You're one of us. You're one of us. We're all
right. I finished Florida A&M in the 90s, and then I went over to Europe in the 2000s and did some work at near Newcastle. Sunderland is the university up there, and that's where all the foreign pharmacists go through. So I did that, and I worked there for a few years, and it was fun. So.
Well, with your international background in pharmacy, what's the answer? What's going on with our opioid? I mean, we know that crises like this invasion and war and trauma from past wars and daily life, daily struggle. Life for civilians isn't a bed of roses every day. Sometimes there are struggles for civilians without brain trauma, but the opioid addiction can conquer anyone. So, as a pharmacist, world traveled and trained, what do you think? What's your What's your take on the solution?
Well, I don't know what the is. I don't think there is a one. There's not a quick fix. There's not a magic wand to make it all go away. There is a place for opioid therapy in the management of pain. Opioids are excellent, medications. It's an excellent product. However, the potential for abuse is very high. And it's something where it works, but almost too well for some time. So the desire not to be in pain can be higher than you can get addicted easily.
Addiction. And I think it all depends on the person, because I think each person maybe handled things a little bit differently. We have a caller with a hand up. I see someone. We have a long lot of callers on the board tonight, but someone just raised a hand in area code 904. So let's
904.
Give a shout. 904. It's in Florida. Yes.
Yes, Florida. That's Florida.
All right. You want to take a call? You ready for a caller?
Yeah, ready.
All right, let's do it. Area code 904. You're on the line. Hello.
Hello, Terry.
Yes.
Ken Badger.
Reverend Ken Badger. Hello, friend. Someone we know. This is Reverend Ken Badger. Yes. In fact, how are you tonight, sir? Reverend?
I'm doing fine. I was listening in when you're talking about the actual chronic pain from just mental stress, depression, and those things. And I'm here to tell you, that's a very real thing. It's very real. And this is something I never shared with you, is that I suffered from chronic pain, from stress, depression, and anxiety for about 11 years. And it
what
was
caused?
Just from, it was partly, like you said, I did 21 years in the military and just readjusting to civilian life. Expectations that you come out of the military with and you get into civilian world and those expectations aren't met. So just trying to readjust, it got to the point to where I was medicated for 11 years on sumatriptan because the chronic pain led into cluster headaches.
Right.
You know anything about cluster headaches, they come from nowhere. And they're horrible.
Yeah, they're
absolutely
debilitating
horrible.
Is what
debilitating. That was my first thought.
Exactly.
Too.
It was at the point to where I was taking injections in my head and also using the sumatriptan as a injectable in order to deal with the pain. And
injections
it was affecting.
Did you say injecting in your
just,
head?
Just like yes. I would have to have injections in my head at the four pressure points in order to relieve the pain sometimes. And yes, it was debilitating and it was terrible on my family life to where I just had to find a new direction before I basically was institutionalized. I actually went through a nervous breakdown because of this and because of the depression and the anxieties. And it wasn't until I actually seeked out some mental help, and you could call it a civilian PTSD, in order to get my life back together. So that chronic pain that comes from the stress of just life and mental angst is a very real thing. It's very real. So
right.
People
now, how
need
long
to take that seriously.
I have a question. You know, I mean, there are different multimodal, there are different therapies that can help, counseling, diet and exercise, hyperbaric chamber, all kinds of different complementary and alternative medicine, acupuncture, acupressure. You know, all of it just, you know, you don't know what's going to push you over to feeling better. So what was it that got you to get
it was
like
a change in life
anymore?
It, I had to have a complete change in lifestyle because I did try some of those. I tried the injections. I tried the pills. I tried the therapy, therapist, psychotherapy, all of those things. And it just came down to initially I had to have a complete lifestyle change. It was basically starting from scratch. About a year and a half ago that I actually had to, I left my job in corporate America and started teaching high school. And it was just that drastic of a lifestyle change.
So you had to totally away from your old life.
Right.
And just have a whole mental health rehab change of scenery, everything.
Now, Ken, what you've done is not only brought up a topic that we're discussing, but you've opened up a whole new window of a situation.
But it's relevant.
I've known you since we were teenagers in high school, and it goes to show that you don't know even people in your life who are going through something so enormous, and how you communicate with people you don't, if you didn't know Ken Badger, Reverend Badger, and you met him on the street and he's going through all this, you wouldn't know that. Because every time I've talked with you, you've always sounded so upbeat and inspirational and positive. I would never have known. I just learned this about you tonight on air, live in front of our audience. So you raised an excellent point of how we treat people every day.
Right.
Well, right. You see your police officers and fire, rescue, healthcare. These people are under tremendous stress. And one day you don't know what's going to be the trigger that causes them or just spirals the life into a different avenue. Or just the changes, the trajectory from wellness to illness. Very, very subtle things can happen, and you'll be on a different path. And that's why we need to talk about these things. You can be, just like you said, next to someone, work with them all the time. Well, I didn't know that they were suicidal, and then they're gone. You don't know, because on the outside, sometimes people cope. They cover and they do things that
look at Robin Williams, for example, a famous comedian, famous actor, apparently makes everybody laugh, outwardly happy, and you know what happened to him. I mean, so what happened to you? How are you now? And what was your change? You are better.
I'm great now. I'm absolutely great. I took that lifestyle change, and it was the teaching, believe it or not. As I went into teaching, it was a very high demand job, but not a high stress job. It took my focus basically off of everything that was going on in my life, and started focusing in on what was going on. I was teaching high school, so it was very rewarding. And through all of that, I was coming out of I went through a divorce with all of this. I had a young son who was in the middle of all of that. So it was a drastic change in lifestyle. And sometimes that was just on a suggestion from my therapist, saying that there was a need for a drastic lifestyle change because there were so many things that were going on. No matter what I did, if I changed shifts on my job or if I changed positions, it didn't matter because I was still in the same environment. It was an environmental change that needed to happen in order for me to have my own mental stability. And once I got that environmental change, I mean, life changed drastically. I mean, it was at a point to where I had started to go down the road of drug addiction. Like you said, opiates was not my drug of choice, but yet there was something there looking for something to relieve the pain and the stress. But it was just a lifestyle change.
How did you find the change? How did you know what the new direction was? How did you find it?
Well, it was years of therapy, believe it or not.
Therapy.
Years of therapy I had to go through in order to ensure that change. And then I met someone down the road who was the total opposite of me, and we ended up, well, we're still married to this day. So, and just trying to get to a point in my life like I am now, I'm completely happy.
Well, you know, stress is a factor, and you name some things that are very stressful that we don't think about. Divorce is stressful,
yes.
But moving is stressful. And in a divorce, often you're moving, you know, the houses are splitting and all that. Finances, that's stressful. Getting married, joining two lives together, that's stressful. Having a new job, that's stressful. So those stressors can often tip the scale. You're doing these things to try and manage the stress and change the stress level and alter your environment. But ultimately, some of those are adding stress and uncertainty.
Exactly.
But you actually were very fortunate. You were able to manage and get your stress level and your life and the pain and hopelessness or depression, whatever you were feeling, you were able to kind of balance those things and change your trajectory from the downward spiral of where hopelessness,
yes.
Depression, pain, and that circle of just that. It's so great to hear your story of success
and how
you turned around. Like someone out there is listening, and they're like, wow, if he can do
the
it.
The key to it all.
Let's turn it around, Reverend. Let's tap into your wealth of information, Reverend. We get to Reverend part. Let's talk about and your experience. You now learn tonight that you've actually been through it. You're one of us, a survivor. So, with both of those elements, what do you say to our audience who's dealing with trauma right now? Not just because of the Ukrainian situation, but that's our focus tonight because it's a serious world matter. What would you say to the world people who are affected by this?
You have to take a hard look at yourself inwardly. You know, there are so many things that are happening, and especially with the things that are going on in the Ukraine, and then especially with the things that are happening here right in the United States. We have so many things going on with our political discourse and just the violence within the streets. You have to stop focusing in on all of those things and focus in on yourself. You have to talk to someone if you are at a point to where you're feeling depressed. And as you say, I was an ordained minister. And with that being said, you take on other people's baggage and problems and the stress of just trying to ensure that those people that are in your life are not at a point to where they're going to be overloaded or overwhelmed with the daily burdens that are going on within their lives. You have to take care of your own mental state before you can actually help anybody else. And until you
right.
do that, the key is to talk to someone about it. Do not be afraid to open up and talk to somebody about it, because if you don't and you harbor all of that energy and all of that stress within yourself, you're killing yourself daily.
I don't know if that's true,
right. It's a mental suicide, basically. So you have to be able to recognize the things that are going on and have the courage to admit that you have a problem.
And not internalize it, because internalizing it leads
yes,
to all
exactly.
kinds of mental disorders and potentially stroke, seizures, aneurysm, all kinds of debilitating issues, potentially fatal even, heart attacks.
Yes.
What I
yes.
find very sad and just disconcerting, it's the stigma. Mental health, PTSD, anxiety, depression, they're so common, but they're stigmatized. People don't seek treatment. They don't want to talk about it, put on a brave face. And it does not help. It's not helpful. There's a great commercial out now about, I'm not sure what it is. It may be for counseling or something, but it's just so to the point. It shows these people that are, they're looking happy, but they're depressed or having a problem. And, oh, cheer up, someone says. It's not helpful. Oh, you've got everything to look forward to. That's not helpful. But if people could open up a little and,
you know,
funny
what, Michelle, it's funny because I went through, there was a period, in fact, it's kind of still existing, but I felt guilty for opening up with my pain because I felt as if there were people who were so much worse and had it. I felt guilty, like as if I weren't grateful for what I had, that I was bitching or complaining about my thing, and my thing probably was nothing compared to what other people are going through. So,
well, in your accident, people actually lost their lives. So you were very lucky to survive. That was almost, you know, an unsurvivable accident you had.
Well, I know, but I mean, the point is that I think a lot of people, maybe I'm the only one, but I think maybe other people can relate, that the guilt of speaking out loud, you might feel is unworthy because of other people having it worse. My point is that I, over time,
yeah,
I learned that that isn't true, that it's all relative to what's affecting you. And
well, right. Part of the stigma that we think, oh, someone's worse and they need that more, or I am not that bad, or it didn't. If you're feeling any kind of way, then it's valid. We like to, many people invalidate their own feelings and, oh, it's not macho, or I can't, men don't go to therapy, or whatever it is.
Let's ask Reverend Badger. I mean, Reverend Badger, I grew up in the church. My father was a deacon in the church until I left for college, and after college I kind of went in a different direction. But is it still that you could go to the pastor and just kind of express what you're going through and talk? Is that still a thing? Is that still done?
It is. It is still a thing, and it is still done. But the thing is that a lot of people don't trust their pastors.
Right.
Don't trust the pastor.
So,
wait a second. What do you mean?
Yeah, it's the church. The church itself has grown such a negative connotation because you'll find a lot of churches, the pastors are more CEOs than they are pastors. And if you
right,
the business,
my grandfather,
business.
Right, my grandfather was pastor for 50 plus years, and my father was a deacon for over 40. So,
oh, but yeah, let's qualify Reverend Badger's background. His father was one of the biggest church in Jacksonville, Florida, in the black community.
It has changed so, and I would have these conversations with some people and ask them, well, why don't you go to the pastor? And they say, well, the pastor doesn't have time. They're too busy trying to run the church instead of trying to learn their parishioners. I found that in most of the smaller churches, you will find that the pastors do a very good job of counseling. But in the larger churches, which most people are now drawn to, you don't find that.
Because you're too massive, too many people. You're just one of the numbers of
right,
the congregation.
Right. It's
okay.
The majority of the time you'll find it has become a social status for people to be associated with these large mega churches instead of trying to actually be involved in a church and to be involved within the community and to be there for those people who actually need to talk to a pastor if they have a very strong spiritual or religious background. And they want to go to their pastors to speak. As I said, most of them don't. I've had people tell me that. You know, I've had young people who I've tried to refer to a youth pastor. Said, "Well, you need to speak with the youth pastors." And I had one kid tell me straight up, "I don't trust that dude. I just don't." That's why I'm talking with you.
So what do you recommend as an alternative?
I recommend that you seek out. Believe it or not, you seek out someone close to you that is not a family member, that someone that has actually you can trust, because such as myself, when I did that, they directed me to a very good psychotherapist. And with that, that was the first step. They said, hey, you need to talk to someone. I don't care if you're a pastor or you got all these pastor friends or whatever. You need to talk to someone. You know, it's
right.
The things that are causing your chronic pain are mental, and it's going to kill you. So
if you don't make a lifestyle change.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's something that you really have to look at, and you have to find someone that you can truly trust. The person that directed me to my therapist was someone that I actually would have put my entire life in their hands. If it depended on me surviving, you have to find someone that is trustworthy enough and someone that loves you and cares and values you enough as a person to invest in you and give you good advice and good direction. So as Michelle was saying, we wear so many different masks trying to keep up the illusions of everyday life to where, for instance, as me, as you said, every time we had a conversation, you know, over the past 10, 12 years, you would have never known that was going on. Because
I did not tonight.
That
yes, that's right? What I'm saying. It's
And I kept telling you, Terry, I'm going to call into the show. Terry, I'm going to call into the show. And something always came up, but I made it a point today. I just felt that the time was right for me to come out and let you know the things that were happening and why. And that's why I kept telling you, we have more in common than you think, Terry.
We have more in common than you think. It makes sense now. The clarity is there, and I appreciate you for sharing that on the air with our listeners, because you opened, I think, inspiration for us to communicate. Essentially, it sounds as if we're all saying communication is one of the key elements into our healing. Into
right.
Into.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Absolutely. It has to be communication. And the communication has to start with you. Not only communication is the trust. You have to find someone that you can trust. And it's hard to do when you're in such pain, when you're actually in physical pain because of the mental anxieties that you're living on a daily life. It is difficult to discern sometimes the people that are actually on your side, those people that you can really trust. And so it really affects your judgment in the multiple ways. As far as your daily life and also with your personal life, and you just have to sit back. I remember many days that I would just sit back in a dark room, you know, depressed, trying to figure out why, you know, why is this happening? What is going on? Why do I have this pain? And my wife was not aware of the headaches, the cluster headaches. And the first time that she experienced it and, you know, see me go through it with the convulsions, the cold sweats, everything that comes along with that, it frightened her so that she was one of the people that kept saying, you need to find somebody to help you with that. You know, what is going on? And the lifestyle change was major to me. Major. I've moved on from teaching. I'm back into corporate America, back into occupation and into a position that I'm very comfortable with. And once that lifestyle change was made, I haven't had a cluster headache in two, almost 3 years now.
Well, good. That's
and
good to hear.
There's
good to
such
know
a clarity. That. Yeah, there's such a clarity now on life itself that, I mean, it's just – It's a beautiful thing to go from, like you said, to survive something that debilitating, and not only with the chronic pain, but with the mental anguish that you go through daily. That, you know, I can do nothing but thank God for every day that I have now. I used to preach it a lot, you know, every day was a gift, you know, that's why they call it the present.
Yes.
Because it's a gift, but it truly is. And if you look back over everything that we've gone through, and I remember the first time we had the discussion about your situation, Terry, I was so blown away. And the days we talked, and see, and you, with the loss of some of your long-term memory, because, see, you still stop at us knowing each other from teenagers. And we've known each other, Terry, since I was 9 years old.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah,
Brandon,
and you know,
I was 9 years old, and you were 8 years old when we first met, Terry, at a track meet. You and I and Ronnie and my dad at Rebound High School. I remember it like it was yesterday. So, and so, that's why you have to have people that you trust and love to stay in your lives when you go through these things.
Because trauma can leave you lost, like you said. I didn't remember that, but not only that, but this which you just revealed to our audience tonight, I just was clueless. You hit it so well that I say this a lot, Michelle. You and I talk about this on air almost every month about people hiding things, but when it actually happens to you, like I feel as if I've been like living a different person. I didn't have
parallel
a clue
universe.
You hit it so well.
Exactly.
But that's what people do, you know. We see what we want to see. We show what people want to hear. It's not nice. It's not happy. It's not fun. It's not being sad or depressed or in pain doesn't make a good bio on Facebook or whatever you do. You know, you won't get on Snapchat looking sad. So
you're right.
Really?
We've got to find that person you can confide in and talk with off the spotlight. In fact, I have a note here. I'm looking at a note in my radio notes here. I won't call him out by name, but A. Lewis, does that ring a bell, Reverend Badger? We've not heard from him. I've been hoping each month to hear from him. I have a note here from you about him phoning the show, talking to us about his story.
I saw him today. Yeah, I saw him today, and we conversate every time we talk, and he shares his story with everyone he runs across, and you and he have very, very similar stories.
Okay.
He was injured in combat. He keeps his helmet on his desk as a candy jar. He was actually somebody sniped him, and he survived. He died, I think he said twice on the operating table.
Yeah, how's that in common?
Survivor. And I'll let him know that we did talk, and he has the same issue. He has portions of his memory. So,
all right. Well, thank you for sharing so much with us tonight with your story, and we look forward to hearing his story. But your story is inspirational in a multifaceted way. I mean, because not only what you went through and overcame, a period of 11 years. So we can talk about your acquisition of this position in life and your ascension from it.
Exactly.
When you hang up, Michelle and I are going to talk about that. And
we are.
Okay. Yeah. So we're gonna talk about that, how good it is, and know that it can be done. So thank you for that inspiration. That is uplifting.
Thank you.
And that's what we need in a positive night. Tonight we need
and
that,
nice
especially.
Thank you for calling.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to hear from you. And let's keep in touch off when we're not on air. Let's get in touch and talk more, Reverend Badger. I think we probably can communicate and find more people we can help and do something positive in this community.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much and have a great evening.
Take care. Good night.
Okay, good night, Ken. Reverend Badger. Reverend Badger, good night.
Badger, give him his prop.
Yes, all right. Michelle, I tell you what, it's like you telling me about your brain injury. It blows me away to know that he went through something like that for so long. He's the epitome of an inspirational leader who is just living the life of God-like, a God-like man who's straight and narrow and there to help with no nonsense kind of fellow. Even my memory from high school, and he says it goes back to eight years old, which is way before high school, but with my memory, it's kind of hit and miss. But my memory is of him being just a leader in high school and just a good person, one of the good guys, right? One of the really, really good guys. And his,
right.
and his father being the pastor of one of the biggest churches in the city. So
right.
he's always had this positive, just wholesome image and appearance. So I felt close to him to believe that that was the way it was. Now tonight on air live, we learned that it wasn't that way for 11 years of his career. And
well, you know, that's said before too. People that put on a brave face and are happy all the time, maybe there's some sadness there. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe there's not. But we need to be free enough to talk about our issues or have at least one confidant or something, because the issues don't go away because you put your head in the sand like an ostrich. You pop up for air and it's all right there. So,
and not only that, it's dangerous with your head down there, because that's when you can't breathe. You suffocate and you cause aneurysms and, as we said earlier, strokes and heart attacks.
Well, so illness. Other illnesses come up and it becomes a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a mental health expert by any means. I'm happy because I found a way to relieve some of my own stress and talking, being on a routine, having a low-stress kind of routine lifestyle, exercise, eating better, different things that I do for myself, self-care, is very important. And I found myself getting bogged down. Many women do it with the family and soccer mom and this and that, and you neglect yourself. And
well,
that's
you know,
one...
You said something earlier about speaking and talking to other people. It's funny, I was talking with somebody, I forget who earlier today, but I said that you don't necessarily have to have another human being. I spend so much time talking with myself that sometimes I forget that I'm alone.
I don't know
literally.
If that's
is that healthy or is that mental illness? What does that mean? I don't know. It works.
The voices told me to do it. I...
But
I
this is a cathartic reward for this self-expression, just screaming at the top of my lungs sometimes or having a rational conversation. I counterpoint myself. But we have another caller who wants to speak.
Sometimes you are the smartest person in the room, you know.
Well,
I thought you were going to say, I thought you were going to say talking to a pet. Or like your fish.
That works too. That's a good idea. You're right. That works as well.
I think there was, I read one time, something about the watching the fish and your blood pressure, that it was calming.
Yeah,
and
that's
pets
like are that way. That's, yeah.
Yeah, and they come, they love you. You had a bad day at work, and then your dog comes up and says, "Hey, buddy, what's up?" You know, they're like
mm-hmm.
always there wagging that tail. How can you be sad that little fella's there and he depends on you?
And kittens,
so,
too. Kittens and kitties have that same thing.
I thought you were going to say.
In fact, I would go to the Pacific Ocean and it's like 2, 3 in the morning and just scream as loud as my body would allow to the universe.
Oh.
And
was that you? No.
You heard it on the East Coast. You probably did. I was that intense.
Gosh, I was up in Redding. I heard you in California.
Oh, Redding, California, way up north, California.
Way up north.
So you get it out. You get it out. We have another caller on the line who wants to say something. You ready to take another caller?
Deep breath. Yes, I will be ready. I'm ready.
Let's ready.
Do
Let's
it.
Take caller from area code 765. Surprise us. Area code 765, you're live and on the air. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Mr. Smith and guest? What's up?
Well, hello.
Hi.
How are you? Who's this?
This is Brandon. I'm dwelling at my friend's three survivors, and yeah, we called it was a couple weeks before his 50th birthday.
Brandon, your phone is vibrating. Are you close to the radio, or can you turn your volume down or something? We're having trouble hearing you.
Down
by some interference there.
There's a lot of interference.
Is that any better?
Okay.
No.
Any better?
Yeah, that's a little better. No.
Okay. So the pharmacist, correct? Is that what you had said earlier?
Michelle.
That's me. I'm the pharmacist.
Before the phone went, the battery shut it down. I had to get the 1 hour of the restroom. May I read something to you?
Okay.
Short, less than 50 words. The endogenous cannabinoid system, named the plant that led to its discovery, is one of the most important physiologic systems involved in establishing and maintaining human health. Receptors are found throughout the body, in the brain, organs, connective tissues, glands, and immune cells. So, state of Michigan's kind of had an open market for maybe a century. Ford had hemp cars, and I guess included with the government for pharmaceuticals, and now it's becoming so popular in pharmaceuticals that we sell out to all, what's the money man's name, the devil. I can't think of his name. But
well, listen,
I
couldn't really wait. Bad. It's a little bit fuzzy. Like
yeah, you have a bad connection. Maybe you can try on a different line to reach us.
Yeah, or text in your question. I'm not sure what he was asking.
If you're on a computer, you can reach us at blogtalkradio.com/survivinghead trauma. And there's a chat board. We can read what you wrote. In fact, there's Ronald Kratz on the line right now. Hello, Ronald. But what's your name?
Are you Kim's son or something?
I'm sorry. What's your name?
I think he hung up.
I think we lost our caller. That was a bad connection. Sometimes that happens if your line isn't clear, or if you have the volume too loud on the radio behind you on your computer. And you're sitting close to it, it can create that reverberation, kind of that sound, that vibrating sound. So I'm not sure. Did you get anything from what he was saying? I couldn't quite.
No, I was trying to listen really hard to see if there was a drug or a chemical that he was talking about, and it sounded like some kind of body system. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, cannabinoid, the cannabinoid system from the marijuana system.
He wasn't listening to our show. That was 2 months ago. We covered cannabis a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we're open. So if you're going to bring in something that's not on topic, we're flexible. We always say that we're flexible. We'll roll with the flow. But getting back on track though, to where we were
around for hundreds of years, and
we were
so, proving
yes, we definitely whatever. I forget. I didn't quite get his name. So if you're still listening, we are total advocate. Or at least I am a total advocate of marijuana. I mean, it for me is a life changer and saver. I mean, it stopped my seizures from being grand mal to petite mal to virtually, but controllable. That mixed with the right dosage of anti-seizure medication and marijuana and my temperament, oh my goodness, it takes me from rage, infuriating volcanic eruption to, hi, hello, this is Terry Smith on the Brain Injury Radio Network. So I don't know if you could tolerate me without it, if you were in my inner orbit, if you will. So I'm not sure where you were taking the cannabinoid question, but yes, whatever the answer is, whatever the question was, if it's leaning towards a positive answer, I'm taking it there. Yes. Michelle, do you have a take on cannabis, the cannabinoid medicine?
No, I did have some, I lived in Colorado for a while and that's everywhere. So, I did have a friend, this guy, Mike, lived around the corner from me, and he opened one of the first shops there in Denver, and it was just, he He was busy as I don't know what. And they were working out the laws. It was very odd that he, I remember his problem was money, because the money was coming in so much and he had so much cash because the credit card, certain states weren't recognizing the cannabis as a legal entity or business or whatever. You know, there was just some gray area.
Well, I need a quick education on that. To quick make that real quick, it's not a it can't be federally insured because it's not a federally legalized substance. So it can't go to the bank or through a credit card.
That was his issue.
It's a cash industry, which is creating a whole new market now to handle all the cash, because banks won't touch it because it's not a federally legal entity or product.
He had all the cars, and he paid for cash for the car, and he had cash for the house, and they're, you know, Denver.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're in
an
expensive neighborhood, and I'm like, everything I asked him to volunteer for, he volunteered, and he'd bring his big old truck and different things, and that was the issue. That's exactly what was going on.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. In fact, that's what's making all these new companies money, because they're finding ways to, for these profit, for-profit marijuana, especially the recreational states where it's legal. Here in Florida, it's only legal for medicinal purposes, but the combination throughout the country, we're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry that has to go through entrepreneurs now rather than banks until it's federally legalized. So but as a pharmacist now, going back to what's your opinion on that? I mean, what's the holdup? Why is it federal? Why is it Schedule II drug? Is it Schedule I or Schedule II?
I don't know. I'd have to look that up. But I don't, you know, it varies from state to state, and I work in, I cover quite a few states besides New York, Illinois, Colorado, California, Florida. I've got a lot of ground that I cover, so it's difficult to keep up with some of the laws in all the states. I do have to refresh the drug's same no matter what, but the laws are slightly different from state to state, so I do have to brush up on that occasionally. But I don't know. I don't know. But we're operating like 50 different countries. So you cross the line with so many ounces a few grams of this and a few ounces of that, and you're free to go in this state, but you cross the line and you're going to get locked up. So,
About that. That was, my top, because, you know, my philosophy on that is are we really a United States when you can save your life from seizures in one state with it, but cross the street in another state, you're arrested for the same thing. So how united are we? I mean, so we're really just different villages with one big title. So not that I'm downing, it's a great system, but I mean, I think there's a way to make this better. And that's come to some agreement in the federal level. And realize the benefit of it, but there's so much money involved. I mean, because marijuana is not just a plant; the hemp that it comes from is such a big industry, and it replaces the pharmaceutical industry. There's so much money at stake. Greed, that takes us back to the Ukraine. Why do you have to own all the land on the planet? It's one spaceship. We're one human race on a planet. We're all sharing a spaceship, and on this spaceship, soaring through space. Soaring through space in our galaxy is going at millions of miles, and we're just fighting like little kids in a sandbox. It makes no sense to me. Even with brain trauma, I can't comprehend this. It's as if the brain trauma on our planet is so severe that we need a neurologist from a different planet or something to come here and make sense of this madness. We're so smart that we can build and design ships to take us to other planets and come back and land in an X on a square in a little circle, but we can't, and we design all these weapons to kill each other, but we can't find a way to coexist. There's something mentally ill with this planet, and it angers me that we haven't started some type of medical recovery, because there's an obvious mental problem. we can't play on the same spaceship? What's wrong with that? Why, we fight over this most ridiculous, insane, absurd things. The race, the color of your skin, the religion you were taught by someone else who taught those people about who taught from thousands of years of translation. We're going to fight over the word of a meaning. It's just so ludicrous to me. I cannot wrap my brain trauma around it. It's such a critical injury on this planet that I was hoping that we would get a call from a writer I met the other day. I had to take my car in for some overhaul, and the person who drove me home had a relative who wrote a book, and her name is Kelly McClintock, and it's called Find Your Happy, and she hopefully I was hoping she would call us tonight, but we have not heard from her to talk about how to get our happy back in this insane, mad world of brain trauma with the Ukraine and just life itself. Being pulled over because of the color of your skin and killed, that makes no sense. I don't understand. Why aren't we designing ways to use – I think I used this metaphor before, but the body, the human race, the body is the whole of our spaceship occupancy. The toes live in one wing, the fingers over here, the head, the waist, and those are all different people. So the fingers get mad at the toes, so we smash the toes. So we just smash our toes. We're one people, but we just smashed our toes because we don't like the way they speak or the way their eyes look, the toes, the people. You see the metaphor? Is this making sense? Am I going too far off the deep end? But
it's a power. Socks on them and keep going.
What's that?
I said put socks on them and keep going. I'm a fixer, okay? I fix stuff.
Well, that's what we want to do. We were hoping to get some ideas on how to get us back into happy. And as I glance up, I see someone else who wants to join in who might we haven't talked with. Guess who's on the line?
Is it the author?
It's Angela.
She heard you.
No, not the author. It's Angela. We got the Angela. I'm Brandon. I'm bringing in the line. Stand by. Guess who's on the line? It's way. We can cheer. Where's the cheer?
Angela,
you're on the air live. Hello. Hello. I'm putting the wrong person in the air live. I'm sorry. That was the wrong line. Let's try that again.
Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear
we had the wrong person on the air live.
Hi, Angela.
Hello.
Hi.
I thought I saw your hand. I pressed the wrong hand button. Your hand isn't up. I brought you on involuntarily. Oh, you didn't mean to come on air.
No, yes, I did. I put my hand up, and then I just got a new phone, and normally when I'm talking to you and talking to the guests, I'm normally on a headphone set, but I got a new phone, and my headset won't connect to my new phone. So I was trying to figure it out while I was calling in.
Well, you sound clear. Welcome back. Angela, Michelle, it's our first night together.
Trio. Yes.
Yes. Hello. Angela, meet Michelle. Michelle, meet Angela.
We know each other.
Oh, yeah. You were a guest.
I remember.
So the three of us have interacted.
I don't remember that, but... We've spoken on the phone once before. We talked off air. We talked off air.
Okay.
I think that's how I meet everybody.
What?
Are you up to speed with the show? Have you been listening tonight?
Not all night. I just been listening for the past like 20 minutes.
Okay, so you kind of get an idea that we're talking about March is, of course, Brain Injury Awareness Month, and. We're talking really about the brain trauma that the world is experiencing with this Russian invasion. So right now that it's Brain Injury Awareness Month, it reminds me, we're going to take a 21-second break, and then we're going to come back and completely welcome you. So we'll be back in 21 seconds.
Oh, right. Get the fan.
If you've experienced a brain injury, you're not alone. For help, call the Brain Injury Association today at 1-800-444-6443, 1-800-444-6443, on the web at BIAUSA.org.
BIAUSA.org. Well, Angela, welcome back. Tell us what's been going on with you. We haven't heard from you in a few months now.
I know. Yeah, there's been a lot going on. I don't want to consume this, you know, your couple hours with me.
Well, we only have a half hour left, so you can't consume all of it. 45 minutes. Go.
45
well,
minutes.
My shit, I mean, my stuff, sorry, Terry. Sorry when I just said S-H-I-T. Sorry.
It's brain injury thing. We curse. Come on. We know.
I'm starting off right, aren't I, Terry?
We're remembering now.
Yes.
So what happened?
No, it's I've just been having some heart problems, and just not been able to be on air, and not really been able to do much of anything.
Well, now that was January and Christmas, right around December and January.
It started in the end of January.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what we're talking about, though—the chronic pain and all that stuff leads to depression and hopelessness and sadness, and it's a big spiral. So these health issues are relevant. We need to talk about it. Tell us.
Well,
you know.
I mean, I will say this right now, as far as the health issues.
Mm-hmm.
It will put you definitely in a state of depression. That's for sure. It's been a while since I had my brain injury, and I haven't gotten over it. I'm still, I still have my depressive issues and stuff like that. But now I've kind of gone into more of a state of depression because of my heart. You can't do much when you have heart issues.
So how restricted are you? Are you able to exercise or go out and do things, or are you house restricted?
I can't exercise. I can do things. I mean, I can do things, like for example, today I cleaned my bathroom, and that doesn't sound like much, but I cleaned my bathroom, and I had to, after I cleaned the sink and the toilet and stuff, I had to sit down, and I have a heart, I have an eye watch.
Oh, like the pain.
That actually, let me just say this right off the bat. My boyfriend's eye watch saved my life.
Right.
So if anyone has one, if you don't have one, get one. If you have any heart issues or any medical issues whatsoever, get one, because it saved my life.
How? What happened?
I woke up at 2:00 in the morning, and I was having chest pains, and I've never had any heart problems or anything like that ever in my life. I don't have high blood pressure. I don't have cardiovascular or anything. And I woke up at 2:00 in the morning, and I was having major chest pains, and, we got up, and Chris, my boyfriend, put his eye watch on my wrist, and it showed that my heart rate was at 196.
Wow.
And that's super high. For anyone that doesn't know what that is, that's super, super high.
Yeah,
and he got me to the hospital, and when he got me to the hospital, it went up to 204.
How are you feeling? How were you feeling?
What?
When your heart was beating like that, how were you feeling in yourself? Do you remember feeling a certain way or anything?
Yeah, did you feel normal?
Felt like no, of course not. My heart was racing at 204. No, you don't feel normal.
So you could feel, what was it for you to feel like?
I mean, my heart was going crazy, and I was having chest pains. And 15 minutes, they got me into the ER, one of the rooms, and within 15 minutes, they had the paddles on me.
Wow.
Yeah, because for things in clarity for our listening audience, a normal resting heart rate for adults ranges from 60 to 100 beats per minute.
Yeah, it's like 70.
Right.
You know?
Normal. Normal is about 80. That's the norm.
So when you say 190 to plus 200 plus, that's sincerely over the limit.
Yeah, that's
so
like
they had to paddle you.
Terry,
you paddled.
Terry, Terry, I died.
Electro shock, you know, the paddles where they say clear, you're watching ER or whatever, and they shock the person. Those
right.
are the paddles you're talking about, right?
Terry.
Right, no, exactly. I'm saying you had to be paddled
yes,
how many
Terry.
Times? Yes.
Terry. 12 times.
12 times. Why
and
so
I
many?
Died.
You flatlined on
because,
the table.
Because I kept my heart kept going, and they had to get my heart back into rhythm because my heart was out of rhythm. And two of the times that they put me on the paddles, I was awake.
Painful,
wait,
isn't
you
it?
You felt the shock? You felt the shock is what you're saying?
Oh, my God. You have no idea. It
wait,
was
you
like,
felt the shock?
They say it's like being kicked by a donkey in your chest, but
yeah.
it's like nothing. I mean, I can't even imagine being kicked in the by a donkey in my chest hurting that bad. It was horrible.
What?
It was awful.
Why did they
this
have to
is
do
one reason why this is one and this is one reason why I didn't want to come on the show tonight is because I was going to start getting like stressed or whatever.
Yeah, don't
my
ever...
heart starts. I just wanted to get I wanted to come on because I miss you, Terry. I miss you so much. And but yeah, it was bad. I did die. They had me in a coma for 2 days. They had the tube down my throat, and they told me I was pregnant on top of that at 49 years old.
Wait, oh my goodness. Well, congratulations.
Fuck you. I mean, excuse my language.
I fried the
oh,
man.
I guess that's not good news.
No, I'm not pregnant.
Oh, you're not. It was a false alarm. A false alarm. Okay.
No, but they took two pregnancy tests and they said I was pregnant. I woke up from a coma having them take the tubes out of my throat and my boyfriend's looking down on me going, baby, you're pregnant. I'm like, what?
Wait.
What do you mean I'm pregnant?
Like I said, all that shock. I mean, that would have taken, I don't know.
Well,
it was nuts.
Well, at least that wasn't serious. That wasn't real. You have to deal with that for the next rest of your life. This is something that's controllable.
And then I had to go back to the hospital. Last month, when we were going to do the show again, this month, I had to go back to the hospital again because I was having another issue. And they told me I was pregnant again, twice.
You keep getting these false positives. What?
Something might be out of whack.
Michelle, what do you think? You're from, what's going on, Michelle?
Do the bioidentical hormone replacement training. So it could be the hormones, you know, are not.
Well, they said they thought it might be my thyroid because I don't have a thyroid. I take thyroid replacement, and I my thyroid's been in complete total control for years. But
those pregnancy tests for something else, like female hormones and whatever, just to kind of simplify it. So
it's just crazy. I mean, you wake up from a coma and you got your boyfriend standing over you at 49 when you haven't had sex in 3 months. And
well, that means
you
only got
pregnant?
4 months pregnant. The baby ought to be coming soon.
I know, right? I got a baby.
Cute little fat babies.
Oh,
I can't
well,
wait for my baby.
Well, I'm glad you felt better
baby.
Enough to call in tonight.
You what?
It's good to have you. I'm glad that you're feeling better enough to call in tonight to join us again for our first trio tonight.
Yeah, you know how stressed I get about calling in on our show, and that's one reason I didn't want to be part of the show tonight. It's just because I stress, and when I stress, my heart rate gets up there high. And
yeah,
good.
Well, it's good that you called because
I
was getting a little heated just now because I get so upset when I think of human beings being so smart to create such and design such imaginative, just far fetched like. Futuristic intergalactical designs of spectacular things on this planet, and then the same token can make weapons.
I don't know.
It makes me angry that.
Go on and have some coffee, Harry. You're going off the rails.
No, I'm going to come back.
Harry,
I was getting a little carried away.
You are freaking, listen, you need me back on the call, on the show, because you're getting out of control, mister.
Well, you know what? It's the world. Let's get the world in control. That's what we should do.
Mr. Intergalactical, superficial, don't.
No, we want to say something and find a way, I think, somehow, if it went askew this far, there's a way to get it back. Like Reverend Badger.
Lay off the weed pipe, Terry. Lay off the weed pipe.
Are you saying there's no hope? You don't think there's a possibility?
I'm telling you that you need to lay off the weed pipe, my friend. I love
so you.
But you don't think there's hope for peace?
But
I'm telling you, you're going off the rails here, kid.
But listen, my question is, do you think there's hope? I mean, is there hope for? Do we give up
for
on
what?
Hope? For peace, for man living on this spaceship without killing each other, finding a way to turn those weapons into some type of exploration.
We're talking about me dying, and now you're talking about living on a spaceship.
Are you talking about this Earth ship, the spaceship Earth? I don't get it.
Spaceship Earth. It's our
God.
Living, where we all live. I mean, do not.
Did you eat some mushrooms lately?
No, listen to what we're saying, Angela. I mean, I'm asking you a serious question. Do you think that we as human beings can live cohesively, passively, could in peace on this planet? Or is that delusional to think that it's possible? Is it delusional or is it something we can strive to achieve?
I think that we're talking about different than what we're talking about. We were talking about a second ago.
I can't hear what you're saying.
You're breaking up.
I think that we're talking about something that we were not talking about a second ago. Now
my question is still on the table, Angela. The question is it delusional or is it achievable?
What does that have to do with what we were talking about?
All right, Angela,
with
we're
going to
put
health.
You in the green for just a second. We'll be back with Angela in just a second. She's not quite ready for this yet. But what we will do is ask you, Michelle, is it delusional? I mean, are we barking up the wrong tree, or is it something that man, if in the right direction with the right opioids or the right psychological aid, is it possible?
Is it possible to all, can't we all just get along type of thing?
Well,
is that what you're saying?
I'm wondering, is it possible for us to play on this spaceship together and without finding wars that could kill the entire planet with simple pushes of buttons? It's frightening.
What the, hope is not a plan, but the short answer is no. As long as somebody's got more cookies than the other one, there's going to be some kind of upset. As long as 4% of the population has 90% of the wealth, and we're not taking care of people. I don't know if that's the answer, but no. As long as we look different, act different, there's them, there's these and those, all of that, no. No. We're going to have different, and we're not going to all get along. Many people are going to get along. The majority of people are, I believe are good and don't want strife and they don't want to steal your stuff. They just want to.
And I think that majority is what will prevail. I think that, I mean, if it can go wrong, that means at some point it had to have been a possibility of it working. I mean, because if we
see, maybe when it was only one dude.
Why can't we redirect that energy, that curiosity, the desire to kill and conquer and reshape the young and reform our – like Reverend Badger was saying, it was a lifestyle change. If our dramatic brain injury on this planet is so critical and so severe, how do we approach a planet like we would a single individual? By retraining our habits, neuroplasticity? For example, if we were against we finally did alien invasions, we suddenly would become Earthlings.
Wait a second, stop. Let me just stop you there. that's going off on a road that's not what we're talking about. We do kind of wander off the subject, but I'm going to stop you there, and I'll just say that hope is not a good plan. You can't just hope for the best.
Well, no, no, I'm talking about strategy. I'm talking about strategy, not just hope, but hope being the – is it possible? Is it possible? Is it? Can it strategically be done?
I don't know, and I don't
think
so.
I believe it can be done. I believe it can strategically be done. I think if we plant the right seeds in the right locations by the right people, we can redirect the growth of this planet. And it's simply a matter of people who believe that it can be done, because those who believe in the future and can see the vision are the ones who accomplish it.
Nope. Some stupid person's going to screw it up. So
well, of course. But we're not talking about the masses. We're
talking
about a few, because only the few. The masses, yes. Maybe panic, hysterical, people who are not conscientious enough or intellectually capable enough. But there are a few on this planet, if gathered, I believe, can change the direction if we get this together and coordinate. Like the coordinating of the rioting of the Capitol. That took coordination, action, planning. So the same can be done with an execution of global oneness to recognize that we're all people on the same planet. I don't see that as absurd or as brain trauma, mental illness or anything else. I think that's a concrete method that requires simple strategy to implement. And once it's implemented, I don't see why it would not work if we get enough people to join the drive.
You can't.
What's that?
I said the insurrection was coordinated too. So
that's what I'm saying. Coordinated too. That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Coordinated. The right coordination can result in results.
No, there's too many variables, and all it takes is one stupid person to ruin the – it's one bad apple to ruin the whole bunch. And so that's –
but you're saying
very,
one person can stop the growth of the entire planet Earth? One person has that much power?
Yes.
All right, that's like saying one bee is not that intimidating. One bumblebee or one wasp is not that intimidating. But if you get a million or a billion of them, that might intimidate you. So me, just my only voice here tonight, trying to make sense of the illogical.
Terry,
I'm just one bee. But if I get a billion of people who believe that, tell me that you don't get a little bit more positive or optimistic about the potential.
I'm not being negative. I'm being realistic.
Realistic. Is realist reality only negative? Is that the only then you're saying reality is only negative? There's no way to avoid it. It's an ingrained introspective part of our DNA.
Hey, we've gone somewhere that's different from where we started. But what I will say is, we are in control of ourselves. That is what I can control. My little square of being, and I have maybe some influence on a few little bits around, my kids and where I live and things like that. In the scheme of things, that's about all that I have control over. That being said, I said earlier, way back at the beginning, that we are interconnected in some way. And what happens in my house affects my family. My family affects my neighborhood. My neighborhood affects my city. My city affects my state. And all of that, and eventually it does reach out globally and then to the universe. If we're going to think like that, so we can go very small in, and we can go very far out into the universe and
look
down.
That's how you eat an elephant. That's how you eat an elephant. You don't take an elephant in one bite. It goes back to what Reverend Badger said.
And you do take it in one bite. One bite at a time, and you eat the whole thing. But that's the plan.
It's not one bite, the whole thing. The whole thing is eaten one bite at a time. is what it goes back to what from Badger's. It says the same thing. Focus on yourself and the world in your orbit, and that's where it starts. The seed planted inside the house that this world can improve with each individual is exactly where it begins and blossoms and ascends to intergalactical experience.
Well, like I said, I do believe that we are in, that we are human race. Now, the way that things get solved or fixed or we're living in harmony, that is more difficult to solve and attain.
Well, difficult. If it were easy, we wouldn't be at war right now. We wouldn't have military branches of it in any country. I mean,
right.
Of course it's not easy. That's why each generation affords us a brain, a generation of people, and each generation helps us elevate to the next level. Otherwise,
listen,
we'd still be in caves fighting like barbarians.
Fight.
Hey, what's that?
There's two dudes, it's going to be a fight. It's just now, bring all the guns. Who brings a gun to the beach? What's happening down there with your Florida people? It's
well,
everywhere. The whole world is crazy.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the whole topic of tonight. It's Brain Trauma Awareness Month. In fact, we'll take this moment to give PSA number 3 for Brain Injury Association. So hold on for 35 seconds. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Research, treatment, and support speed recovery for the more than 2.5 million children and adults who sustain traumatic brain injuries in the United States each year. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. Support research and better access to care and let people with brain injuries know that they are not alone. Call 1-800-444-6443 or visit www.biausa.org to learn more about brain injury.
BIAUSA.org. So there is help out there. So this world is in trauma. But for all those of us who've actually had brain trauma, I mean, literally living with TBI, it's difficult. But at this point, even people without technically diagnosed TBI, it's a psychological trauma that the world is experiencing right now with this Russian invasion of a peaceful nation, and it's heart wrenching. So we have to look for the hope and the good, and that's why I was really hoping that our newly found author Kelly McClintock would call us tonight with Find Your Happy, a book called Find Your Happy. She covers a lot of great points in there. I haven't read the entire book, but I was able to peruse it and get key points. And it's about finding joy. Well, hopefully she'll call next. We'll save her for next month. But
we'll contact
this month,
her, and then we'll reach out to her beforehand.
Well, we tried to get her earlier, and we weren't successful. But hopefully she'll give us a call next month. But we do appreciate Reverend Badger tonight for him to give us his spiritual view of what's happening and this focusing on the self and the people in your immediate orbit, because that sounds like a good direction for us all to start. It's sort of like the old song from Michael Jackson, The Man in the Mirror. Start with The Man in the Mirror.
Well, right.
Can that
change? That's true. But I just, in my lifetime, I don't see it.
Well, no, we're not talking overnight. This is not something, we didn't get to this point overnight. It took thousands of years, millions of years to get here. But it's all,
okay,
I think,
but
part
I mean,
of the
as
process.
Long as there's going to be some conflict.
Yeah, I
so.
Think that, yeah, there's no doubt that everything, I believe that it's too mathematically in sync for its orbit and the flow of everything, the flowers, the seasons, and all that. It takes us, everything that happens in your life, the accident that most of us have been in, for somehow put us in a place that we otherwise wouldn't have been in, and there's something in it that takes us to a place, a new dimension, for reason, for some reason in it. And we're here in this place on this spaceship flying through space for a reason, and it's up to the curious brains of each generation to help elevate us to the next one and the next generation. So
I don't believe in coincidence. I believe things happen and we run into people and meet people and things happen. It's just if we're in tune enough to, not clairvoyant, I don't believe in that stuff, but if we're in tune with ourselves and what's happening around us, that we can pick up these clues. You know, we're spiritual beings. So, and I'm a spiritual person. But anyway, it's just very, very interesting. Very interesting concept, what you're talking about there.
Well, yeah, and it's a concept. That's exactly what it is. It's a concept. But most of our society is based on a concept. I mean, the experiment of the United States was a concept. I mean, so the biggest things that we have right now, the most powerful nation that we say on this planet, started as a concept. Let's try all these different nations living under one country and see how that works. So far, how's that worked for us? We'll see that after another one, because I'm trying to squeeze these in before the end of the night with USA, I mean, Brain Injury Association of America. Another one. This one is 32 seconds. We'll be right back.
Okay, let's do it.
5.3 million Americans living with traumatic brain injuries want the same things we all want. A good job, someone to love, a nice home, and fun in their lives. They're not alone. The Brain Injury Association of America wants to remind you that March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. For information about brain injury and how you can help raise awareness, visit the Brain Injury Association of America at www.biausa.org.
BIAUSA.org.
Yeah.
If you're new to the brain injury world, I mean, that's an organization that will probably help you more than a lot of other potential sources in your area. So look them up on the internet. You can find them and find a local chapter in your neighborhood, probably, or at least close enough to get help. Because we realize how tough it is in the beginning. So we send our hearts out to you, and hopefully we have said something that will trigger something that will help guide you through this new journey of yours, because that's what happens when this happens, brain injury. Brain injury is something that can happen to anyone, anywhere, anytime. And
well, you know what I wanted to say? Oh, go ahead.
Okay, I think that, let's see, hold on a second. I'm going to ask a question. What's your number? I've got a text that we may have a treat in store tonight on the switchboard. There's so many phone numbers on the switchboard. I'm not sure which one, but I just received a text from our author that we've been talking about tonight, Kelly McClintoncock. I'm pronouncing her last name wrong, but I'm not sure which number is hers. And I asked her to just tell me which number is hers. So we'll see, or raise her hand on the switchboard. There's so many hands up now. I don't know who she is. I don't want to bring the wrong person on the air, but she's somewhere on the switchboard. I've yet to master the switchboard. Michelle, we need to teach you how to use the switchboard so that you can pull it up and help.
It's busy tonight.
It is busy tonight. I know. It's a more brain injury awareness month. I mean, brain injury month. Yeah, is a time that we get a lot of conversation, because there's so much going on, especially with the Brain Injury Association of America. Typically, this time of the year, they are on Capitol Hill fighting for rights for the disabled and getting the rights for our brain trauma sisters and brothers. But her number is now, let's see, 1-4. All right, well, let's get her on the air. Kelly, I'm going to bring you on the air. Let's get her on. Angela, you ready? Michelle, you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. Kelly, welcome to Surviving Head Trauma.
Hello.
Hi. How are you this evening?
Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for writing the book, Find Your Happy.
Uh-huh.
Oh, thanks for saying that.
You know,
it makes me high on life reading that book. It's just so optimistic and uplifting.
Oh, thanks so much for saying that. I really appreciate that.
And your timing is impeccable, because we need something like this right now in the world. We need to get our happy on. And I thank you so much for sharing it with me and our audience. And
yes,
you want to give us a quick we have 15 minutes left in the show. A quick background on your story, and then we'll talk about your book.
Sure. I have been on hold listening to your show, and I didn't know exactly how it worked. And then I got to listening, and I kept listening, and I forgot all about the fact that I was waiting to maybe get through. And then I heard you mentioning me a couple of times, and I was thinking, but I'm here. I'm on hold. And I didn't know how to kind of – and then you said, could she raise her hand? And I'm like, I don't know how to raise my hand. But I listened to, you know, talk about spaceships and weed smoking and unplanned pregnancies and PTSD. I was like, I have no idea what they're going to ask me.
I digress, but I usually bring it back and make sense of it.
I loved it. I had your question, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, just a little bit of background on me. I am a licensed counselor, and I've worked mostly with a criminal population my entire career. And then, you know, so happiness was sort of, you know, something I've always been interested in and studied and looked at. And working in the jail system, it's a pretty unhappy place. And so it taught me so much about happiness. No better place to really examine your life than sitting in a jail cell. You know, everybody, everybody has that opportunity there. So I got to experience that and, you know, was kind of thinking about writing this book on happiness for a long, long time and just kind of kept putting little notes together and kind of adding to my little jar. And then I had a real crisis happen personally. And I hadn't really ever had any problems with depression or anxiety or those things. I was always pretty intrinsically happy until 2014. In 2014, my 11-year-old son, he was just shy of his 12th birthday, was complaining of leg pain. And, you know, he was athletic, and we had taken him to the doctor, and they said, oh, you know, it's a pulled muscle. He'll get over it. And so it continued, and finally what we thought was a sports injury turned out to be a Ewing sarcoma tumor on his left femur.
And
in that moment, I mean, the world stopped. I mean, it stopped spinning on its axis for me and for my family. And I just felt so robbed of my joy. I wondered how we were going to get through this. But the thought of what my sweet child was going to go through was just, and you had someone earlier talking about how the mental pain caused physical pain.
Right.
It was the first time I had ever had something like that. I mean, it physically was painful. And it was just so much bigger than me. You know, prior to this, you know, I had a really successful career, and I just really thought that, you know, you could out-hustle anything. You could out-hustle it, you know, outsmart it, outwit it, you know, hard work, determination, those things. And with this, there was just no guarantees. You know, no matter what I did, there was no guarantees. And that feeling of having something so much bigger than you, I knew I needed to get busy writing this book at some point. And I wrote this book for myself and for my family. I mean, I got all those scrap pieces of paper together, and I put together, you know, just a thing. And we used to read it at the kitchen table. And it got piecemealed together, and then eventually it turned into the book that you read. Yeah.
What about your son? How's your son now? What's the end result?
It is such – I feel so blessed to say that he is healthy and well and thriving. To look at him today, you'd never know what he's been through. I mean, that's the beauty. At the end of the book, I put a picture of him. It's my favorite picture because it shows him and my other son. They're kind of like flexing their muscles, you know. And I wondered if I should put it in there. I didn't know if it was appropriate. But I love it so much because it's just a picture of, like, youth and health, and it just wasn't a certainty at one time that picture would ever happen. But he's healthy. He's in college. He's studying physical therapy. he lights up the room when he walks in. And the fact that he is a walking miracle never escapes me. You know,
well,
when I look at him every day. Yeah.
Yes. Well, what can you tell us in a nutshell? How we, I mean, we can find your book anywhere books are sold, or is it special
order?
Yeah,
it's on Amazon. Yeah, on Amazon. Yep.
Find Your Happy. I don't know if I've been butchering your last name all night or not, but Kelly
McClintock.
I did get it right. Okay, Kelly McClintock. Yep. Find Your Happy. Any quick tips for how to find some happiness in this mad, mad world we're living in at this moment?
Well, I think what Michelle was saying earlier is so on target about, you know, she talked about taking care of your little neck of the woods, right? And if we all did that, if we all took care of our own space and our own kids and all of that, and then she talked about how your neighborhood goes out into, you know, it spreads. And I think that's so important. And then it's a step further, just important to not lose sight of the connectedness of all that is. Because I think when you see these wars and things and the ugliness of the world, it's because people have lost sight of our connectedness to all that exists, to all that is on this earth.
That's one of the things I pick up in your book that I so admire.
I'm trying to say what she said.
What
she said,
What she said.
In fact, in her book, she starts out, on page 6, it says, who am I, why am I here, what is my purpose, what is my true calling? Those are the who, what, when, why, and all. My website, same questions I propose in the first page. And throughout your book here, I can't praise it enough for the review on the pieces. I'm trying to look for the notes I made on the side here, but there are so many, the God has no religions. And it goes on and on. I want everyone out there to get this book and read it, because I think it will add to your dimension, your view, your perspective of what happiness really is. And it's the most the highest, most successful state of life. I believe happiness, and it's the hardest thing to find. Billionaires, the wealthiest men in the world, people, women, it's search and still can't find that elusive happiness. So I think he and she who finds it are the happiest people on this planet. So
it's our life's most important work, right? Is to find happiness. And whether I'm talking to a room full of inmates or whether I'm in a room full of executives, the topic is relevant. Everybody wants a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you're exactly right. It is exactly why we're here on this earth, is to find that fulfillment. We all want it. And it looks a little different for everybody. It doesn't always look exactly the same, right? And so that's part of kind of, you know, figuring that all out and navigating it. But that's why I kind of put this together the way that I did. And the other sort of universal, like, piece of happiness that I think is just so universal is the concept of gratitude and forgiveness. You know, those two things are just sort of like the centerpiece, right? Because gratitude is kind of like, it's like the fairy dust that, you know, stokes our spiritual flame and our internal happiness and all of that if we can really have gratitude. But gratitude is so complex, you know, and if I could really make a whole book on gratitude, but, you know, gratitude is more than just like, I'm thankful for something. It's, I'm thankful for everything, even the really crappy stuff I'm thankful for, because
I think, you know, there's something, I won't quote the Bible, but there's some little scripture that speaks of adversity building character and perseverance. And when we read that in church, I was like, wow. You know, I was thinking, oh, my God, why is this all happening to me? And it's so terrible. And after that, I thought, yeah, you know, I'm being forged by fire.
Mm-hmm.
This bad thing isn't going to be bad all the time.
And what I've taken from that is when life does something and we think, why is this happening? Why is this happening to me? What, instead of why is this happening to me, I've learned that if I ask instead, what am I learning from this? What is this teaching me? It elevates this horrible thing into something that's going to elevate me to a different perspective and level.
Right.
What am I here to learn? Right, exactly.
What is this teaching me? Yes. What am I learning from this whole horrible experience?
Things aren't bad. Things aren't good. They just are things. And it's how we look at them. So you're looking at, oh, why did this horrible thing happen? Oh, what did I have to learn from it? So, yeah.
What is it teaching me? That's it. So
trying to rephrase it through a little different lens of, you know, instead of why me, like you're saying, you know, feeling chosen instead of targeted. You know, I'm honored to be looking for a new job because I got fired, or I am honored to be dealing with this problem. I'm honored to have cancer because not everybody gets a chance to fight a disease. Some people get hit by a bus and they don't have that opportunity. You know, I'm honored for this challenge. I'm honored for whatever it is that's kind of coming into our life. Such a hard concept, easy to talk about right now, easy to say that we do. And in the moment, of course, we're not feeling that way.
Well, Kelly, you know what? I can support what you're saying in the broader sense, because I like to go into these deep philosophical arenas. And I can see what you're saying in the sense that we're here. We get to exist in this physical realm of what we perceive as reality in the physical world on this, what I call the spaceship planet Earth. So even if it's something horrific like cancer or we're going through a war, we're in this experience that we interpret and we make of it what we determine and interpret. But we are here in this amazing place called life, the physical, the tangible world of the living.
Mm-hmm. And that's something to be grateful for.
That's right.
Especially that after dying, we come back and we are so amazed about the clouds, everything is amazing. The breeze and the trees flowing back and forth. It's a beautiful world. It makes me so sad when I see men pointing guns at each other to claim a piece of sand. Holy land, that to me is the most absurd thing. This whole planet is holy. Everything that we perceive is everything.
Right.
It's Kelly, I hope you call back when we have more time, because right now we're down to less than 2 minutes, so we're going to have to say goodnight to you and our audience.
Okay.
So thank you for calling tonight. Maybe next month you'll join us and we'll get to talk more about your book and more details about The Road to Happiness.
Right, raise your hand at 10 o'clock.
Yes, press one. Press one on the phone.
But I enjoyed the show. Thank you so much.
Press one.
Yes, thank you for calling. So we'll say goodnight to you.
All right.
Thank you, Kelly.
Good night. Kelly.
Night.
It was great talking with you.
Yes,
I gotta finish this book. We gotta finish this book. It's
have a minute thirty seconds. So let's on our last thirty seconds. We gotta remember to remind our audience now. Surviving Head Trauma is more than just a podcast on the Brain Injury Radio Network. It's also a book anywhere books are sold. Surviving Head Trauma by Terry Smith, and it's also on my website with other works and this podcast. All the archived shows are on terrysmithbooks.com. And Facebook, you can find Surviving Head Trauma page every day. There's a post of something to uplift or educate, inspire, and give you knowledge or something to help you get through surviving head trauma. Michelle, Angela, Angela had to leave us early. I think she may not have been feeling as well as she thought. But Michelle, thank you for joining us tonight with your knowledge and wealth of opinion and help to this
world. Well, thank you for having me. I'm honored. It's just a great evening. Great evening.
Yes.
Great show.
Brain Injury Awareness Month. And remember, we create awareness so that we can make prevention happen. And when we prevent, we save lives. So Brain Injury Awareness Month. 10 seconds left on air. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Michelle, for joining us. Thank you, Angela, for joining us. Thank you, all of our guests tonight. And we will see you next month. Especially, yes, definitely Kelly, Reverend Badger, too. So next month, our show is April. I'm looking at my calendar. April, let's see, it's going a little slow here. April 1, 2, 3, April 28th. We'll see you on April 28th of next month. So until then, stay safe and we'll say goodnight. Good night, Anne. Michelle.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.